Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it's another big week.
Let's see, my God, where do we start? Ty, what do you think about this thing with Tyson Fury on, I don't know, did you happen to see him on ESPN during the fights last week?
Oh, yeah, I saw his call out of Deontay Wilder. I think the thing that has fans perplexed is just how quickly everything was, gears were switched, I should say. Literally just 2 weeks ago, two weeks ago, Tyson Fury himself announced on his Twitter to fight with AJ's done. I'll see him in Saudi Arabia. Then, as we know, the arbitration goes through. Deontay Wilder is ordered to fight Tyson Fury. And just that quick, Tyson Fury's on ESPN talking about, I'm going to knock you out, bitch. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, including writers, not just fans and pundits, but a lot of writers and pundits think that it was, you know, the whole Anthony Joshua-Tyson Fury negotiation was a smokescreen. When in reality, he still had to honor his obligation of Deontay Wilder.
Right, right. See, what do you think?
What's happening absolutely should happen. Tyson Fury signed a contract for apparently a rematch with Deontay Wilder. And, yeah, I mean, things, you know, things should fall in that order. With that said, I mean, technically, if you want me to get down to the fight, I don't know where Deontay Wilder's head is. That and it's as simple as that. You're going into a fight with, I mean, you were undefeated and you were, you know, the baddest man on earth, and that, you know, you claimed the thing. You were looking like it, and you know, even in the first fight, you knocked the guy down twice. So you know, you guys rematch, and he beats the, you know, the dog doo-doo out of you. And Deontay, he went a little different than he usually does after his win. And you can see, I mean, and just his, just that demeanor, his reactions, not his talk as much to me as his actions kind of showed that it shook him up a bit.
Right.
And really, you know, that it's the mental part of the game that gets you through. So I don't, you know, I have to see where his head is before I can even kind of break it down analytically between the two.
You know, I think Zito brings up a very valid point, because specifically in heavyweight boxing, there's the history of once that destroyer gets destroyed, he has a hard time, rebounding. You think of George Foreman when he got beat by Ali, what that did to him mentally and psychologically, right? You think about Sonny Liston again with Ali, you know, what that did to him. So. And Mike Tyson even, right?
Mike
so there's
Tyson.
A history of these devastating destroyers. Once the curtain has been kind of lifted upon them, they have a hard time rebounding, you know, more so like Zito said, mentally and psychologically. So I think he has a very valid point.
Good. Hey, Bob, what do you think about Max Holloway's fight coming up on the 17th of July with Rodriguez?
Holloway versus Rodriguez? Is that UFC?
It's July 17th.
Yeah, against Rare Rodriguez, you're talking. Yeah,
right.
Holloway's, Holloway's on that decision victory over Calvin Kattar as well. So, Pierre is not to be trifled with. He's one of those up and comers as well. So, that would be definitely a good matchup.
Okay.
Yair Rodriguez is literally one of the most exciting guys in the division. Flashy style. We saw he had a last second kind of up elbow on Chanceo Park to knock him out in the final second. That was like a knockout that went viral. A couple years ago, he was ducking under Park's attack and threw an elbow upwards and knocked him flat out as the bell rung. Just one of the craziest things you'd ever see in a fight. And, you know, you remember that? And, you know, he's a guy who had a lot of steam. Yeah, Rodriguez had a lot of steam, but, you know, then he had some injuries. He had some contract disputes. He failed a drug test. And so he's a guy they were looking at as potentially fighting. When Holloway was speaking of him fighting an eliminator for the title, but then he had, you know, an issue, was out for a long time. So this is a fight a lot of fans wanted to see because of Rodriguez's style. But kind of like, you know, like Bob was saying, Holloway's been proven to be on another level, and he's been like that for several years. And the kid's still only 29 years old. So you got to think he's probably going to go ahead and box Yair Rodriguez up. But it could be an exciting fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Holloway was good at like 19. You know, he's going to have a real good career.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me ask you another one, Bob. Rob Font and Peter Yan. That's coming up next month. What's your thoughts on that one?
Okay, so messy division. You know, we got Font just came off the victory over Cody Garbrandt, and that was a good fight to watch. Now, Cody Garbrandt's got that more of that powerful swing. You know, he's got that knockout power, and you always watch for that. But then Font just stood in there and just took him apart with that jab. Once he found his range, you know, he was in there and just kept lighting him up, did a lot of damage with his jab, which was really, really good. So, which I thought was funny, when they interviewed the winner and they want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I watched that, and he's sitting there. I don't know if many people had a fat lip, but when you have a fat lip and everyone's asking you those questions, you just kind of wish the questions would stop. You know what I mean? Like, anyway. Peter Yan as well, I mean, that's already set up because they were looking for a rematch against him versus Aljamain Sterling. You know, I mean,
Right now, Font is screaming for a fight with Yan. You know, he's saying, hey, let's make an interim title fight with Yan. Yan is dismissed. Yan is only focused on trying to get this rematch with Aljo Sterling. Sterling's had neck surgery, so don't know when that's going to happen. But a fight between Yan and Font is not on the books just yet. And chances are the winner of T.J. Dillashaw against Corey Sandhagen would be the number one contender. But as of right now, it looks like Yan is trying to wait for the rematch with Sandhagen and T.J. Dillashaw probably deciding the number one contender. Rob Font's doing what he's supposed to do. He had a big win over Corey Garbrandt. Because Yan doesn't have a fight schedule, he's the only guy above Rob Font in the ratings that doesn't have a fight scheduled. Everyone knows he's not fighting because he's looking for the Sterling rematch. But Yan, you know, Font did what he's supposed to do. He called him out, and, you know, you see what happens. You know, maybe Dana White will be like, all right, well, we don't know how long Sterling's going to sit, so maybe we make this fight. But as of right now, Rob Font knows he actually has some waiting to do before he gets a shot. He's got a couple guys ahead of him before he could actually fight for the title. And again, Peter Yan's next fight will probably be for the title.
Yeah, well, he only lost it from a DQ, correct? I mean,
exactly.
Bad advice from his corner, looked over to the, you know, made the crazy Russian comment that day, I remember. Looked at his corner and just, you know, got two different pieces of advice and followed the wrong one, you know?
Yes, sir.
So, that's
exactly what happened.
Hey, Z, what do you think the first Scottish title holder, Josh Taylor's fight last week?
Impressive. Impressive. But, I mean, what Josh Taylor showed me is he showed me that, first of all, he looked bigger than Ramirez. But he was more fluid, and he was sharper. As simple as that. He just looked bigger and sharper, and that's hard to deal with. That's really kind of hard to deal with. I mean, because it looked like at times Ramirez, when he had problems getting close to him, and then he had problems when he was close to him. Then he had problems keeping him off of him to a certain extent. Ramirez landed some good shots. He did some good work, but, Josh was just bigger and sharper. So, I mean, that's what it looked like to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, Ty, let me ask you a question. The WBA has ordered the Joshua Usyk fight as soon as possible. But then,
yeah,
the very next day, Eddie Hearn comes out and says, well – you know, we may give up that title. We don't want that fight. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if they do that. I think it's a bit of gamesmanship from Eddie Hearn, specifically coming off the whole Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua debacle. But the fact of the matter is they had talked about giving that title up at, you know, one time before to make the fight with Tyson Fury. But once that fight fell through, they have to fulfill their mandatory. And so chances are that he's not going to relinquish the title. He's going to fight Usyk. If he relinquishes the title, it'll be between Usyk and Joe Joyce. And that's a fight that was looking to line up potentially if Fury and Joshua happened. But with that not happening, again, everything was predicated on this Fury-Joshua fight happening because, you know, it would be a unification, four-belt unification. Mm-hmm. But once that fell through, very conveniently, every party had a go-to plan in place to move on to their next bout. So, again, I think what was being put in the press as far as that fight happening and what was going on behind the scenes were two different things, because literally the day after the arbitration ruling with Deontay Wilder went through, the WBA mandated that they needed just cause as to why he couldn't fight Usyk within 48 hours. So they enforced the mandatory immediately after that arbitration ruling was set. So, you know, I kind of think these were the directions that the parties on the inside kind of knew we were heading. So I absolutely think you're going to get the Fury-Joshua or the Joshua-Usyk fight. I'd be very surprised if he dropped that title.
Wow. Okay. You know, I don't know if you guys watch it's called Pawn Stars. This morning I was just happened to be going through Facebook, and here is Dana White in the thing, and it's in Vegas, and he's talking about building a what do you call it, a weapons room in his house, and he spent $120,000 just on swords, but holy God, what do you need that for? It was funny to see him on TV trying to do that. Hey, Bob, what do you think about Michael Pereira and Mike Price, UFC 264 next month?
They're set up, yeah. That'll be on the Conor McGregor Poirier card. So that's a good setup. Nico, they're both coming off wins. Nico, two fights ago, got a draw that was upturned against Cerrone, and then can't remember the guy he beat last. And then Pierre's sneaky, though. I mean, Price is more of a banger. I think Mikel Pereira is a bit more sneaky, so that'll be a good show. That'll mm-hmm. you know.
So if you guys remember, Michel Pineda is the guy who he's a big welterweight. He's a guy who flips and does all the flipping stuff.
Crazy stuff.
He's the wild man. They call him the Brazilian wild man. You know, he's a guy who bounces off the cage and flips in. And remember in his, you know, one fight, his UFC debut, he went viral, had a flying knockout. Then he comes out his next fight, comes out and does like a 5-10 minute dance routine, flips and back flips and does all this stuff during the match fighting this smaller guy and gasses. And the guy wins the decision. I know you guys remember that. He then fought Diego Sanchez, was destroying Diego Sanchez, but then hit Diego Sanchez with an illegal knee, just like Jan did to Sterling, and he got disqualified. Since then, he's still kind of flying, but he's not doing as much of the big techniques and movements that gassed him, and he's 1-2 straight. Nico Price is a step up in class, though, so and it's a very violent fight. Nico Price is a very violent fighter, so it's going to be a very that's one for the hardcore blood and gut fans. Like, these guys are going to throw down. Like, no one's going to take anybody down. You're going to have one guy who can be getting his ass beat in Nico Price and all of a sudden just catch you with something. Then you have another guy who's bouncing off the cages and doing showtime kicks and backflips and somersaults. It's insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Insane fight.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, Zeke, we got Devin Haney and Jorge Linares tonight. Both made weights, both pretty decent size. There's doesn't seem to be any any weight advantage. What do you think this fight's going to do?
It's going to be interesting, and to be honest, it's just what to be is up to where Jorge Linares has left. If to me, Devin Haney outpoints him, then Jorge, he's really lost. He's lost his, you know, his top level step.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see that happening. One thing about Linares is Linares respects power. He respects power, and he's as simple as that. But he's not an easy guy to get to, especially because he's offensively gifted. He's bigger than he's bigger than Haney. So
no.
Haney has. I thought he was taller.
No, Haney's the bigger guy. Remember, Linares started at 126. Haney's 22 years old. He's 135. He's taller, and he's probably not even that long for that division.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Haney is a guy you think of more. He's more of a boxer. He's more of an outpointer in to men. And I think Linares, Linares can give him trouble. Linares is a guy, he's offensively gifted, and he can give Haney trouble.
Hey, Bob, what do you think about Paige VanZant's upcoming fight with Rachel Ostovich?
Well, they're switching over to bare knuckles doing that. It's going to be a rematch. That they actually met up back in UFC. Oh, I can't remember which one it was. But then, yeah, and Paige VanZant beat her then with an armbar. Now Paige has moved over to the bare knuckle stuff. Did her first debut a month or two ago, and the weigh-ins was kind of funny because the girl came up all solid, and Paige just basically choked her, you know, stuck her hand out and just get away from me. And then they, you know, but she didn't win that. But I guess they're going bare knuckles, and I don't know why they want to do that, you know, to develop that starch issue maybe. But best of luck to her.
Yeah,
all striking this time. All, you know, there's no grappling. It's just boxing it out.
Hey, what's the story with I meant to ask you earlier. What's the story with Cyborg and Danny White? They seem to really be having a feud. Bob?
They've never really gotten along. You know, Cyborg, again, wanting to be the GOAT, wanting to be, you know, considered one of the GOATs. But anyway, so they go back and forth, you know, on money and this and that, and they kind of always had. She's been in the UFC, she's back to Bellator, and then back and forth. But her big claim is that the UFC is kind of got a monopoly on everything, and the UFC doesn't promote her, and they don't do, you know, the UFC. Again, it's kind of a good enough claim. I mean, she's talking like any fighter should, you know, and the promoter should promote that fighter, and the UFC kind of promote the UFC, you know, that you get to be on the UFC versus, you know, really getting behind the fighters. And so, I mean, she's got a legitimate claim in my opinion, but Dana White's going to come at everyone in his own opinion. And so it is.
And how the most recent dispute in the most recent dispute between Cyborg and Dana White actually has less to do with the feud and kind of more to do with the monopoly and exclusivity of contracts that we kind of discussed last week. So as we know, George St. Pierre was in negotiations to fight Oscar De La Hoya. Dana White said, no, you're still under contract with the UFC. That cannot happen. Well, Cyborg and Misha Tate's teams were in negotiations to have a grappling match, not a fight, just a grappling match, which a lot of UFC fighters are allowed to compete in grappling matches. So her and Cyborg were in negotiations to have a grappling match, and Dana White said no. And so that's kind of what started that all up again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cyborg has a legitimate. I mean, she's kind of has a long-standing gripe with Dana White. Just off of, as you just said, promotion. Think about Gina Carano. She was, kind of promoted ahead of Cyborg. Then you have Ronda Rousey. It seemed like Cyborg was always sort of pushed to the back to a certain extent.
Well, you know what? With Gina Carano, that actually wasn't Dana White. That was Scott Coker over at Strikeforce. And they were really pushing Gina Carano as the star. She was more crossover. And they wanted her to beat Cyborg, but when Cyborg beat her, they didn't promote her. And then when the UFC absorbed Strikeforce, Gina Carano went to Hollywood, and he never really promoted Cyborg properly. I think everyone can agree with that. And it's caused resentment. And, again, nobody was talking about anybody until this grappling match was nixed by Dana White, and all of a sudden it kind of brought everything back to the fore again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Going back over to boxing, we had an announcement, yesterday morning, a fight I was looking forward to.
John
Pascal and Badu Jack. And then I read his statement in the, I guess it was in Ring this morning. What do you think of that, Ty?
It's funny that Jean Pascal failed, a drugs test, PEDs. And the reason why it's funny is because I was talking to Zito off record a few weeks ago, and we were kind of talking about the first fight and talking about the upcoming fight between the two. It's a fight that we thought was very entertaining the first time. We were looking forward to it. And Zito had pointed out to me Jean Pascal's recent form, how he's been looking recently. And I was like, it's funny, come to think of it, his recent form is significantly better than Badu Jack's. He's kind of had that career renaissance. It's just a conversation Zito and I had, on my balcony, 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden, he fails a drug test. So, what happens when you fail a PED test in combat sports, it brings to question things that happened before. Margarito got caught with raps going into the fight with Shane Mosley, and immediately everyone said he used raps against Miguel Cotto in a fight before. So it's a little eerie. Eerie is the word I'm going to use, because when a combat sport athlete gets caught with PEDs, that's very dangerous, right? So it's a little eerie to me that Zito and I were just, like I said, Zito with his trained eye, pointed it out to me just how the recent form of Jean Pascal's been, and just how quality it's been. And he goes and fails his drug test. So I'm a little torn on that one.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. I can't really make a statement toward, that. But his recent form right now is on hold, apparently. It seems like he's, we talk about Canelo and Billy Joe and all that, they've come back from, and Pascal's a bit older, quite a bit. So it's interesting to see how he responds.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Zito brought up Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders, which I think is brilliant to bring up, because typically, and this is in both sports, MMA and boxing, both sports, right? Typically, if a guy fails a drug test, what immediately happens is you immediately look at how he fought in the fights right before he failed the drug test and how he fights right after he fails the drug test, because after he fails the drug test, there's additional scrutiny on him, and chances are he's got to chill with his doping for a little bit. And for me, when we talk about Billy Joe Saunders, he failed a drug test, never fought at 160 again. He was supposed to fight Demetrius Andrade at 160, failed the drug test. Next thing I know, he's fighting at 168 and has never looked as good again. Canelo failed a drug test and starts looking better than ever. So when all these guys, nobody fails a drug test except T.J. Dillashaw. and says, you know what, I was doping. Yeah, I was trying to cheat. You know what I mean? Most mm-hmm. people don't do that. And the only reason why T.J. Dillashaw did it in the UFC is because he had so much shit in his system, you know, including human growth hormones, that it was just like, all right, dude, you were doping. But typically, there's always an excuse. And it's up to the audience and the pundits whether we buy the excuse. Canelo said it was pain and meat. Nobody believed him. Since then, under WADA, WADA testing, he's performed even better than he was before. Billy Joe Saunders said it was the antihistamine for a cold or something. Since then, he never made that weight again and performed worse. So the jury's going to be out on John Pascal. But once he gets over whatever ban they're going to give him, it's going to be interesting to see how he performs.
Yeah, the problem is, too, his age. I mean, he's only, only going to get older, and he's not right now he's, I mean, he's going to probably face a suspension. So, this could very well end his career, unfortunately. And his competitive part of his career, at least.
Okay. Hey, Bob, there's a new, I don't know if it's outlet or whatever you want to call it, GFC that Masvidal's involved in. Can you explain any of that to our listeners?
I don't know a whole lot about it, okay, but I think Khabib's behind it, and it's out of Russia. And guerrilla fighting championships is what I think it is. And so, again, Khabib's done great in his sport, and we'll see how he gets into the promotions. It'll be all about the matchups, but I'm pretty sure that's what the GFC is you're speaking of, correct?
Yeah, it's Game Bred Fighting Championships, yeah.
It's bare knuckle boxing. It's a bare knuckle boxing. He's doing bare knuckle boxing with that.
Okay.
And I just read that they just announced who the main event's going to be in the first fight. And
yeah, Jason Knight and Charles Barnett.
Yes, Charles, formerly Crazy Bennett. Horse Bennett, now goes by Charles Felony Bennett, is fighting Jason Knight in this bare knuckle fight. Yeah, so it's bare knuckles. Just kind of like the same thing Van Zandt and Ostrovich are about to do.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, Bob, how about telling us about Francis Ngannou and Dominic Lewis.
Possible rematch coming. Ngannou won by decision, but I think Ngannou looks a lot better now, you know, than back then. But Derek Lewis is amazing. For being a big guy with a belly and throwing those head kicks and stuff the way he does, I think that is just fantastic. And so that'll be a real nice matchup, heavyweight division, and see what Derek can bring back this time. Last time, I think they were just too afraid of each other, you know, so they weren't getting into the or they both being big guys don't quite have their range yet. They're just so used to their power, and when someone comes in, you know, landing one of those bombs, so they've really got to figure out how to engage more. You don't ever, you know, that's why I always, you know, I teeter at the 212 mark before they had the 205 division. I'd always fight heavyweights because they want the knockout. Their heavyweight's got the knockout power. We get paid more for that knockout power, but they want to see the dang knockout. You know what I mean? You don't want two big guys in there just dancing around each other and trying to be, you know, unless you're, you know, fantastically skilled at it. So they need to engage next time, and then we'll see where we go from there with that.
You know, the big thing about their first fight, too, Francis Ngannou, that was his first fight off the title loss to Stipe, in which, you know, he was grounded for five rounds and kind of gassed. And, you know, Derek Lewis, if you watch Derek Lewis, he doesn't engage. He's a counter striker by nature. So he kind of waits for you to come to him. Ngannou, by virtue of coming off the first drubbing of his career. You know, he lost, like, in one of his very first fights, but that was the first time he had been dominated in the UFC. It seemed like he did not know how to attack, how to engage Derek Lewis. He could have been a little wary of Lewis's power. He could have been wary of gassing out. But at that point, people thought Francis Ngannou was broken. Again, the big destroyer who, once he got destroyed, was mentally done. But then he came back right after that and you know, knocked out Curtis Blaydes. And then, you know, knocked out Cain Velasquez. You know, went on his run that eventually led to the title. So this is a rebooking of a fight that fans were completely excited about that ended up really being one of the worst fights in UFC history, because you had two big crushing punchers who essentially stared at each other for 15 minutes, with Derek Lewis getting a decision over Ngannou, not because he hurt him, not because he did more damage, but just because he probably threw a few more shots. Simple as that. So I definitely think the fight is going to be, well, it can't be any worse. But, you know, it, outside of a Stipe Miocic or a John Jones, it's probably the most dangerous fight for Ngannou. He has a good chin, but Derek Lewis is the guy you can test that against.
And Ngannou has to worry about gassing out this fight. Derek Lewis is a guy who's going to, I mean, Ngannou is very capable of taking everyone out early. But you don't want Derek Lewis sticking around. Simple as that. Because one thing Derek Lewis, he's pretty good going to the end. He's dangerous all throughout. He may be a little too patient. I mean, just at times. And, you know, just waiting for – and guys wait for the perfect moment, you know, and maybe the perfect shot, especially when you have power. Ngannou is not quite like that, but that one thing is you have to be careful. I mean, explosion – I mean, when you're an explosive guy, you don't want to just hop into anything. I mean, and Ngannou, I mean, he's very aggressive. He's a lot better than he was. The first time he faced Lewis, he has more experience, which is much more important. He's fought a higher level. For the most part.
He fought Stipe. Lewis has it. Yeah, so there it is.
Yeah. So, and he's performed at a better level. I mean, not to take away from, you know, what Derek Lewis just did to Curtis Blaydes. But he's performed at a better level. So just on paper, it looks like, you know, Ngannou should blow him out the water. But this is a fight where, I mean, they're both dangerous early. But, you know, Ngannou more just because of the explosion, and he's going to be fresher. But if the fight wears down, that's a big if. If the fight wears down, start favoring Lewis.
You know what? Ngannou is the bigger, longer, more technical striker, right? So, and he's been better at establishing his range. He did it with Stipe. He was fighting at his range, and, you know, until he wanted to close distance. So he's gotten better at being more patient. And that's the recipe for him to beat Lewis. Just keep it long. You're a better striker than him. Catch him, you know, and eventually break him down. But I don't know if you guys really how vividly you remember his fight against Stipe. He was dominating Stipe. Then he knocked Stipe down, and he charged in, and Stipe hit him with a big right. And Stipe got excited and charged in, but Ngannou ate the right like it was Cheerios, and when Stipe charged in, Stipe got caught. But the one thing that stands out to me is that Ngannou was fighting great, then he had Stipe hurt, and he ran into a shot. Everybody forgets that because the shot didn't faze him. But when he ran into the shot, it stopped him in his tracks, which is what caused Stipe to come forward and get caught. If you run into that shot against Derek Lewis, you don't get stopped in your tracks. You get put down.
No.
Yeah.
So it's still that's what makes it such a dangerous fight for Ngannou.
And it's what should be happening right now, because the heavyweight division was pretty much on pause because John Jones is dorking around. But finally Dana, you know, finally said, hey, I'm tired of waiting on Jones to make up his mind if he's going to jump in the heavyweight division or not. John Jones says, well, it might be a little harder than I thought. But again, Ngannou wanted that that money shot at the John Jones, you know? So
yeah, how's John Jones saying now it's going to take maybe another year?
Yeah, right. Might take another year. You know, I put on a little weight, and I'm not as quick as I was. Welcome to my world.
That's exactly
he started training.
Not as quick as I thought I'd be. Yep.
Yeah.
He started training with these guys. It was like, hold on, wait a minute. They kind of big.
Yeah. They hit hard.
And then John comes out, and not only does he say everything Bob says, but then he's like, the people that only want me to hurry up and do this now, people want to see me lose. Dude, you said you were ready to do it. Nobody.
Yeah.
Like,
but
you said you were ready
right.
to do this.
I mean, that
it's
is
a year.
True. That is also true. I love when the people want to go up that weight division for the GOAT, and then they get sent right back down to their division. You just stay there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, but then again, power to the ones that do it, like DC, and I mean, the one there's people
yeah.
that done it. So, I mean, I
Alexander Gustafsson said that. I'm going to go to heavyweight. I'm reborn. I feel stronger. Make it 205 was killing me. He fought for Fabricio Werdum and got submitted, and he has a bunch of hits.
Yeah.
That heavyweight jump is more difficult than it. Like, Bob is the one who can attest to that. It's not the easiest jump in the world.
Right.
Well, you
there's
know,
no
guys,
way Gustafsson.
They're cutting
there's
to
no
get
way
to 265.
Like,
hey, I got to go on an 18, 20-pound weight cut to make 265. And, you know, Jones is trying to bulk up a little bit. You know, these guys are making that weight cut, and then, you know, they're coming in, they're, you know, 280. They're big boys. I mean, Brock Lesnar, think of those guys. I mean, that's a lot of mess.
How's John Jones going to wrestle Brock Lesnar?
From the bottom.
Right, from the bottom. There you go. Right? Good call. It's called well done. Maybe working on that jiu-jitsu. Yeah, because, I mean, there's times where, you know, you wrestle like the times I got to chance to wrestle with Ken Shamrock and stuff. Like, there's guys that are just so strong, Bob Sapp, that they just, I mean, their mass alone, they just got to lay on something. You know what I mean? It's like
How strong was Josh Barnett, Bob?
Dude, wicked strong. Wicked strong. And the first time we met, it was kind of amateurs. We couldn't even throw punches. I kept just trying to kick him in the head, and he kept taking me down. He's a great wrestler. Man, you know, but yeah, I mean, way strong guy, and he's just gotten better and better and better, you know? So fantastic for him.
By the way, for those of you who don't know, Josh Barnett is one of the most decorated mixed martial artists in the history of this world, one of the baddest dudes to ever do it. He's only won once by disqualification. Can you guess who was against? Who's the one guy that goes in there against the disqualified against Josh Barnett?
Wow. Hey, I'm that guy. What's got two thumbs and one like me?
I love it. The one guy on Josh Barnett's record to lose by disqualification. My guy. Love it.
In my defense, I had just gotten back from the Vale Tudo in Brazil, and it was all bare knuckle. That was my last event. And I was going through, I think, I don't know, probably a breakup of some sort. I was angry, and I went in there, and just, you know, all cocky. I'm like, can I punch? They're like, yep. I'm like, that's all I need to know, and walked out. You know, apparently I couldn't punch from the ground. And, again, one of those things where it's happening, and I did it.
Yeah, how about that?
I did it because it was natural, and, you know, the ref kind of stopped, and then I got my coach over the corner, hit him again. So I just lit him up again, you know what I mean? And then that's when I got DQ. We got DQ'd. So there's that story in a nutshell.
Hey, Bob, what about Michael Pereira and Nico Price heading for UFC 264?
Yeah, didn't we just talk about those guys? That's on the Conor McGregor Poirier card.
Right.
Yeah, we did just talk about that. Pereira, the Brazilian Wild. That card is super stacked, too.
Out.
An amazing card that's stacked up there.
Yeah, that card is stacked.
Yeah. Hey, this one's for Zito. I don't know if anybody – oh, I think if you watched the news, you had to see it. But Jose Zapata was walking down the hall in Virgin Hotel heading towards his dressing room when Jose Ramirez came out. And the two of them started, first they started throwing barbs back and forth. Then they started throwing punches. Did anybody see that? Or the following follow-up that Zapata went in and beat the hell out of Hank Lundy?
No, I didn't even know. I know. So, oh man, I gotta look that up. Zapata and Ramirez had a hell of a fight that a lot of people thought could have gone either way. Zapata did not look great against Hank Lundy. He won, but he didn't look great.
Yeah.
But Zapata never looks great, and that's the one thing about Zapata why he's so underrated, right? Because when he fights down to his competition, when he fought Baranchuk, who was coming out of like a wild man and dropped the four times, he would have had and had the knockout of the year. When he fought Jorge Ramirez, he put like that fight was just as close as the Ramirez Taylor fight, right? That was a very close fight. A lot of people thought Zapata won that fight. Didn't know there was any bad blood between them because no one usually has bad blood with Ramirez. Ramirez is widely considered one of the nicer guys in boxing. But that's interesting. That's a rematch people have. You know, I think people will be interested in seeing. I did not know they got into it, though. Did not know that.
Oh, yeah. He was just walking down, walking towards his dressing room, and they both met in the hallway. And the next thing you see the two of them going at each other, and the next thing you see fists flying and everybody trying to pull them off.
Wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, that was sort of a
both Mexican-Americans from both Mexican-Americans from California, they had a tough fight. You know there's a rivalry there, but I wish I knew about that. Did not know that. Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Z, what do you think Danny Garcia is calling out Keith Thurman. Do you think it's because Keith's had a 2-year layoff, and he thinks now he's got a shot at him?
Right now, Danny Garcia he's a good fighter, and every time he fights, he's been putting up a good account of himself. He just hasn't been coming out on the winning end. So right now he's calling out for a few rematches. I understand that because he's calling out the top guy, and I think he sees out of all the top guys he sees more weakness in Keith right now just because of the layoff, the inactivity,
and that.
Sean Porter, nobody's really been active, but right now realistically I think he's thinking I could get the fight with Keith Thurman. I can get, just realistically talking, promotionally, just, realistically. Sean Porter is probably on a little higher plateau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sean Porter pushed Errol Spence. A lot of people thought some people thought he won that fight or should have been a draw. Like, he fought on that level. Danny was just in the ring with Spence. He wasn't really competitive. He was just kind of there. Landed some shots. He kept Spence honest, but it was just not even a close fight. And Zito's absolutely right. If you're going to call anybody out right now, you call out the guy with the name and still credibility, but who's the most inactive guy in the division, and Keith Thurman. And at the same time, like Zito said, just to paraphrase, but Danny Garcia is at a place right now where he's a veteran in the game. He's clearly not the best guy in his division, but he's still one of the better ones and one of the more marketable names. So there's still money to be made, but he's not the guy. And so he's kind of at that point where it's like, all right, let me call out some guys, make some money, and maybe get one of these losses back. Keith Thurman would be the perfect place for him to start, actually. Just like Zito said, from a promotional standpoint, a marketing standpoint, that's the one right now he'd be most likely to beat because of Keith's inactive status.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about, Ty, what do you think about Gervonta Davis Mario Barreras
against Barrios? Barrios, again, he's a titleist at 140. Obviously, we just watched a four-belt unification fight at 140. So, between Josh Taylor, Jose Rivera, so how much of a titleist at 140 is Mario Barreras? That he's really not, right? He's a titleist, not a champion. So it would be Tank, you know, kind of doing the Adrian Broner thing, going up in weight and collecting a belt against a guy with a belt who's not universally regarded as a champion. With that said, Mario Barros is not a bad fighter. You know, he's definitely a top 10 fighter. Whether he's top 5 remains to be seen. He just hasn't fought those guys. He's a guy who's 5'10" and is a legit 140-pound fighter. Tank Abbott's last fight, or Tank Abbott, I call him Tank Abbott, huh? Tank Davis's last fight was at 130 against a guy who moved up from 118 originally. You know, so, and he's also fought at lightweight. So, you know, Tank Davis, it kind of, you know, it's kind of to me, everybody, you know, talks about this marvelous talent. Vito and I definitely see the skills, but at the same time, we've always seen the issue with his feet to a certain extent. He's just not the quickest footed of guys, you know what I mean? Kind of plodding at times. However, with that said, in spite of all his talent and promise, he seems to be kind of rudderless because he's just running through divisions, just bouncing between divisions. He's a guy who's had discipline issues in the past. So all of a sudden you see a guy who fought his last fight at 130, especially a guy who's like 5'5", and now he's fighting his next fight at 140. And it's a fight that his management didn't want. Leonard Ellerbe said we did not want this fight. You know, we didn't want him to go up to 140. It's the fight he wants. So, you know, it makes you wonder, is it one of those things where he's just like, you know what, I really don't want to cut to 135 and 130. So, you know, I could go ahead and take Barrios, win a title. And if I feel good at 140, then who knows? So obviously now Regis Progre is like, I hope he wins and looks good and feels comfortable so he can fight me. But I don't know. Like, this is a tighter fight than people think. The money's going to go on Tank because Tank is the better fighter. But, you know, there's something to be said moving up 10-2 weight divisions, your very next fight, fighting a guy who is significantly bigger than you. So I don't know, man. I don't like the move career-wise, personally. I don't think it does anything for his legacy. I don't think it does anything for his bank account. But, you know, who knows?
Okay. Z, what do you think about Jamal Charlo versus Juan Montel on the 26th of next month?
I don't know too much about Montel, but I mean, it's apparently Charlo. They're running out of, to me, they're running out of middleweight. It depends. Which Charlo are you talking about? The middleweight one?
Yeah, it's the middleweight one. And Montel is the guy who had a draw with I forget the guy that Charlo knocked out in 2 or 3 rounds, but Montel had a draw with that guy that got knocked out in 2 or 3 rounds with Charlo. Just to let you know, he's again that kind of level of competition, like you were saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that and they're running out of middleweights. I mean, just promotionally to me, what direction can they go? I mean, Canelo's mentioned Charlo's name, and maybe that's a possibility down the line. But what are you going to do till then? I mean, we watched Amir Khan sit up there and wait till down the line. He eventually got it, but I mean, that took a while.
He got flat down the line.
And then he got it.
Flat line down that line.
But still, just imagine the money he could have made in between while fighting. I just see that too many times to me. So that's kind of my.
You know what? And the sad thing too is Jamal Charlo like really had career momentum. He just beat Sergey Derevchenko, his toughest opponent. Yep. He beat him cleaner than anyone else had beaten him. So all of a sudden it was like, you know, maybe this guy is the real deal. Then he goes right back to kind of fighting, you know, a guy who's, you know, presumed not on his level. He can't get the fight with Canelo. He has nothing Canelo wants at this point, with Canelo focused on 158. He has been calling out Triple G, but nobody's doing business. Dazn is not well, for obvious various reasons, Dazn and, you know, PBC aren't making that fight. So, like Tito said, over there in his universe, the PBC universe, they don't really have quality middleweights. They got the junior middleweights on lockdown, which is why his brother is about to fight a unification at junior middleweight. But they don't have middleweight competition for him.
I know this is a going to be a thunderous applause for our next guest who just joined us. Would you like to, as Bennett Cerf used to say, would you like to sign in, mystery caller?
Hey, what up, what up, what up? I want a hot dog eating contest with Logan Paul or Paul Logan, whatever his name is. Get on TMZ and challenge this dude. He is nothing. I swear, him and his brother, I will eat them both.
You sound like Bob.
You
sound like
same
Bob, big dog.
Both of the names are the same.
I would pay for each of you guys to fight one of the brothers each. One fight Logan and one fight Jake. I would love it. Big dog against Logan and Bob against Jake. I would love
no
that.
Rules. No
fantastic.
Rules.
You know, like Butch told me earlier, he said, Benny, I said, I'll fight in the parking lot. He goes, Benny, fight him in the ring and make money. In the parking lot, you get 10 years.
Good point. Cost you money to fight in the parking lot. Make money fighting in the ring or the cage.
Oh, I'm going to be in the parking lot, too, just because I'm that old school. I am like the hillbilly mafia. I don't give a damn.
The Dixie Mafia in the house. Dixie Mafia in the house.
I'm
going to
take his hat for it, too.
I'm going to get shirts made up, Hillbilly Mafia. Hey, I ain't going to stay very long, but I have to say this. Why are these guys, why are they relevant? I mean, first off, their Showtime is stupid. Showtime is stupid. Signing these guys to, you know, whatever, to a deal.
Yeah.
And then they're on TMZ. Yes, I look at TMZ. And they're like, here, Floyd Mayweather needs me. Let me tell you something. Floyd Mayweather don't need you. He needs you just as much as a damn Kardashian needs another damn sister. This is bull. I mean, it's bull crap. I mean, it's bull crap. I'm just, y'all laughing like my wife been on my wedding night. That's not funny. It hurts my feelings. But, anyways, man, I just want to say I love you guys. Keep this going, Fighting Words Radio Network. I got to, again, June 18th, man, 7 o'clock y'all's time, 6 o'clock my time. We're doing a show for Bob, and it's gonna be epic. Right now, so far, I got Lehman Brewster going to come on, David Arias going to come on, David Brooks from Priscilla, a band. We're going to do a lot of great things and talk about the memories of Bob and what he meant to us. And I want you all guys to be a part of it. Oh,
Stevie's going to come on also, Stevie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, you're not. I will punch him. I will beat him next after I beat the bottom. Let me tell you a funny story real quick about Stephen Cunningham. Years ago, we used to play on Xbox together, you know, do Call of Duty.
Awesome.
I was really drunk. And I got up with his friends, and I was the only white guy. I don't care about color, but I was drunk, the only white guy. And we're playing a game, and I was making race jokes because I, you know, before the PC, you know, that's just me, man.
Right.
And I'm doing things, and they're laughing. But when it all ended, I had one kill and like 45 deaths. they had to keep reviving me.
Wow.
So they never asked me to play again. I was like, because I said race jokes. He goes, no, that was funny, but you can't play for a crap. So, but I've gotten better though, guys. I got 3 kills and like only 30 deaths. You know, I'm trying. And I want to say something else before I get off here. This is non-related. This is non-sports related. Everybody, Prince, I don't know about your music taste, but Prince was a great, great musician. I mean, he was one of my favorite. And I grew up in a small town in Texas where it's all, you know, George Strait, George Jones. But I was a Prince fan. And Bob liked Prince.
Yes,
so Sinead O'Connor, remember Sinead O'Connor, little chick who shaved her head?
Yeah, I was reading about her the other day. It's funny.
Yeah, and that's a lie. That is a lie. Prince did not do that to her. She is a liar. He cannot defend himself. and I'm here to defend. I am here to defend him. I will run her ass over. That is bull
crap.
There it is.
I'm with you, big dog. I'm with you, big dog. I didn't like it either.
Bull crap. It's bull. All she's doing is trying to sell a book. I'm going to write a book. When she dies, I'm writing about the book. I'm writing a book about the time she tried to touch me. She tried to touch me. When she dies, I'm writing a book when she tried to touch me. And she cannot defend herself.
When she tried
you
to
should
touch
never.
Me.
You should never.
When she tried to touch me.
Just saying, man. I'm just saying that. Don't touch me. You got no hair. You remember my damn uncle. You look just like him. No.
Oh.
You know, I've called my uncle. My uncle is Uncle No-No for a reason. Do not touch me, Sinead O'Connor. Prince did not do that. I'm just saying, Prince did not do that. Prince was great. Sure, he had his, you know, he was eccentric, you know. We all have our problems. He had better things to do than run over her. I mean, seriously.
I can't see him chasing her down. She just didn't seem like the one he would want to chase down to me. But her story, she was there. I wasn't when she tried to.
Well, maybe she was, you know, maybe she was not there.
And
there you go. Do you really think Prince is going to do it? Prince is getting his brother Dwayne to do it. you got that kind of money, you think I'm going to do it? No, if I have that kind of money, I'm not doing a damn thing. I don't mow my damn yard. My son does, and I'm poor. So imagine me if I'm rich. I ain't doing a damn thing. I'm going to get butt wipers. I'm going to do everything. Hey, your royal penis is clean. I'm not doing nothing. Everybody's doing everything for me. And it's not really royal, just ask my wife. But I'm just saying, and ask Sinead O'Connor if she's trying to touch me. And I am suing her. You know what? Elvis tried to touch me. No, I'm just kidding. I can't say this, man. I cannot do that. But it's like, June 18th, man, we're going to have a great show in honor of Anthony Bob Carroll, Scooter. My grandson is named after him. And we love Bob. We miss Bob. It's fun when it comes to sports. You know, of course, his only flaw in my life was, first off, you know, being a Philadelphia Eagles fan. But you know what? I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, so we all have our flaws in life. But it's going to be a great show, and everybody is encouraged to call in. And you're all invited to talk about Bob. And I'm excited. This will be the first time I've been off the radio. I've been off the show for about a year now. I've taken time off because of personal reasons. You know, I'm doing porn now, so I've been really busy with that. And, you know, I'm only doing short flicks, only short flicks. But I'm just being off. So. The owner of Doghouse Boxing, we call him T. He is coming on he's going to come on and talk about Bob. It's going to be a great time, man. And you all are invited to, you know, to call in and you know, just celebration of Bob. And I want to thank Butch and the Carroll family for always being great with me and being good with me. I love Butch, and I love Miss Sharon. I love Casey and, you know, her 35 kids. I love them. No, I love Frank, Megan. I love all the family, man. And it is an honor to be a man. Casey, please do not. I'm going to text you in a minute. You piece of mother. Blah, 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 blah. But I love the whole family, man. I am honored to be a part of this family. And you guys are all family, and I do thank y'all so much. And like I said, June 18th, man, 7 o'clock, y'all's time, 6 o'clock, my time. We're going to talk about Bob and have a great time.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, guys, we're about our time limit here, so we're going to have to close this out. Benny, you want to start closing out for us?
I'm not good at that. You're a lot better.
Okay. We'll go to Z.
I feel bad. You go ahead.
Okay. Oh, well, another wonderful show. I want to thank Benny. I want to thank Bob. I want to thank Todd, Butch. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, Coach Mel, and Dr. Chris. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Okay.
Hey, great talking to you guys this week. It's on your fans.
always a pleasure to have Big Dog Benny Henderson join. Bob is our co-pilot, Coach Mel watching over us. Dr. Chris keeps us laughing. Everyone, please have a wonderful and safe week.
Bob?
I just want to thank all of our Fighting Words family and friends and for tuning in every week. God bless. Have a great week ahead of you. And finish out your weekend. Happy Memorial Day to all of our fallen soldiers and brothers out there. God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, the men and women of police at the doctors, nurses, at the COVID fighters, and those working in the hospitality industry, especially the supermarkets. Remember, this weekend is dedicated to those, or Monday is dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Please, when you're out there, if you see a Gold Star person, we can never repay them for what they've lost. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. It's Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kettlecat, Sergeant Thomas Bajor, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Rosero, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Rodney Bond, Delaware State Police, Lieutenant Deborah Clayton, Orlando Police Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward, Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Jones, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department, Officer Bob McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Brian LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, and Deputy Mike Malik, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hallow of his hands. Thanks for everything, for all our people.
God bless you all, man. God bless you all.
Shema Israel, ma son Hashem, vorat fed hakuig again, ma yirma.
fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field.
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Love you and we miss you.